We're going to move east now, and we're going to go to Denver and have Blake Seeker give us some words of wisdom. Blake, it's all yours.
Figured out where my button points to. Hold on. There we go. Good morning. My name is Blake Seeker. I'm a partner in an organization called Context. You probably, if nowhere else, have probably run across us because we do the breakfast at SGI every December. I think we've done it for about 15 years now. We're a management consulting firm. We focus pretty much exclusively broadly in this industry. We do syndicated work, which would be multi-client type of reports. We have seven of them. And then we do proprietary work, single client work. The single client work that we do is about 80% of our business. We have eight partners and about 40 associates that work with our organization, so it puts us either one or two in terms of number of people that are committed pretty much to this industry. So what we're going to talk about today is the status and the future dynamics of the corn and soybean seed business. We got all excited when we put this thing together, so we actually had to hide 28 slides. Otherwise, we would have been sitting here for an hour. Some of our folks get pretty excited when they get to talk about all this stuff. So with that, what we're going to talk about is the evolution of the business and the current snapshot, going back about 10 years and looking at where we are, the macro ag dynamics that are impacting the seed business, and then implications and conclusions. The first thing we look at here is we look at, this is not our information, this is public information published by one of the companies in the industry, but one of the big representations is that the large companies are fairly rapidly swallowing the small companies. There are about the same number of licensees as there were 8 or 9 years ago, and as you can see, the large companies are sort of trading share, but the turquoise line, the one identified as I, are the 169 licensees. So what we see is we get a little bit of up, a little bit of down, but we don't see it sort of completely fading away. And we see the larger companies, really since 1997, we see the larger companies loosely trading share. This does not divide out what is transaction-based versus what is, you know, actually organic gain or loss, but it gives us a little bit of idea what this looks like versus what people talk about sometimes. On the soybean side, we see largely the same thing, except that the smaller, the turquoise line, you know, represents a larger amount, and that it's split with the first two, it's split fairly evenly. With the lower ones, it's split, but it's quite consistent. You see here that this goes through 2009. The reality is we were actually going to extend that to 12, but honestly, it doesn't really change all that much. You don't see any great spikes or valleys in that. So this kind of gives us an evolution to share, and we'll talk from there about kind of what we see and why going forward from there. Okay, something else we have to look at that really does, and we'll talk about how technology falls into this in a little while, but we see here that the total biotech acreage, the blue line, has gone up to about 92-93% of total acreage, which is really pretty significant when you look at the fact that in 01 that was 32%. So we've really come from sort of having a technology on the side to really truly being distributors of technology, and the seed is just the platform for that. This is another way to look at it. This is looking at the various traits from triples all the way down, and we see that back in 07 we had 20% was triple going to 71% forecast in 13. So it kind of gives us an idea, not only is technology becoming a much more significant part, but the complexity or the details or the value of that technology is growing significantly as well. And again, that really does change what we're looking at, and it changes our look forward as a seed business, because more and more we are the carriers of technology, and that brings some challenges and some opportunities with it. This is basically a consolidation of looking at what companies, this is not anything where we stick in assumptions, but this is basically what companies are saying about what they're working on and when they think it's going to get to market. And we see here a couple of interesting things. One is the fact that more perhaps than 10 years ago, you see them targeting the same thing. They might be different words, but the reality is the big companies who are involved in technology are loosely chasing the same targets. Nobody's got some great outline target. There is one in here called Improve Feed that this is dated. It's over 10 weeks ago, so that one is changed. But I think this gives us a really good look at exactly how this is working, what we're talking about in terms of the next stage, how significant or insignificant these new changes are going to be. Quite a bit of stuff there. Okay, and again, here we're looking for, you know, additional things. And, you know, you've got a whole laundry list. A lot of some companies disclose a lot differently than other companies. Some kind of throw out the laundry list of everything they've ever thought about. Others, you know, really just talk about things that are kind of really in process or have at least partially been invented. Quite a bit of stuff there. You think? Now, looking at the other side of this, we talked about technology, and then we have the licensing business, the germplasm licensing business. And we think technology is important to talk about, and we'll talk about access to technology here in a little while. But this is important as well. If companies who are not creating their own germplasm don't have access to it or don't have access to good germplasm, you can have all the technology you want. You're going to have a really hard time. And what we're looking at here, and what we're saying is, based on the companies who are really providing it, we don't see there being a significant decrease in what's available. We see a possibility that the quality of that versus the quote inventors may be different. It may be different now. It may be expanding. There are some that are going from licensing inbreds to licensing hybrids, which create fewer original products, you would say. But all in all, what our view is that the lack of germplasm, reasonable germplasm, is probably not going to be a significant barrier, at least in the midterm future. And there can very well be disagreements on that in the room, I understand that. But we, in the work that we do, we basically try to take positions, and our position is we don't think that's going to be a huge barrier. Part of the fact that more people are out licensing germplasm, which means there's more of a competitive world than there used to be. So looking at that, as I said, there are multiple traits in the marketplace, and there are many on the horizon for multiple developers. Key trait developers have already cross-licensed and have indicated an intent to continue to license to small or medium companies. You have a situation right now, and you've heard about all the lawsuits and all the litigation and all the paid up licenses and everything that's going on. And the reality is, when you talk about key things, at least with the latest settlement, there really are not a lot of companies who are severely lacking in the key traits, which is really pretty remarkable when you think about it. The competitive environment for traits should create a slightly more competitive marketplace. Should. Will it? Don't know, but it should. Some traits are more significant than others. Our personal view is that drought resistance will probably be the holy grail of the next wave of traits for corn, complementary glyphosate chemistry resistance in soybeans. We feel pretty strongly about the drought resistance. As you know, that can come in several different forms. It can come in native traits, or it can come in GMO. We believe it's going to be a really hard trait to measure the value of, because you're basically talking about the absence of a bad thing rather than a good thing. And so that in itself is going to cause some challenges in figuring out how to value that. You know, is it going to be less water applied? Is it going to be rescued during a terribly terrible drought? Is it going to be just a little bit of robustness every year? Hard to say. And it probably won't be the same for all the traits developed. And it probably won't be the same for native traits versus the GMO traits as they go along. We believe that faster and better is really what we're talking about here. Those who get to market first are going to probably do the best. The problem with it is that with the difficulty of value capture, whoever really plows this first is really going to have a learning curve, and other people will be able to kind of, you know, like you kind of, the car goes behind the truck, you get to let the wind go around you. I think there's probably some of that's going to happen with that trait. And like I said, we believe germplasm access from originators will likely remain the same, but there may be a germplasm quality or difference between leaders. One of the difficulties we see in that is that it's extremely complex to measure the difference. It's extremely complex to take all of Monsanto's branded business and look at the germplasm and measure the germplasm. Try to take out the technology elements and measure the quality of the germplasm, the robustness of the germplasm, and compare it to what's being licensed from anyone. So we may be slipping a little bit, regardless of who the provider is, we may be slipping a little bit in the quality, but it's going to be extremely hard to measure. One other thing, too, to talk about, and I want to talk about it a few minutes, but we didn't devote a huge amount of time to it. Talking about transactions, the buying and the selling, we really think there are going to be very few transactions involving seed companies with less than 75 to 100,000 bags of corn. And there are several reasons for that. There's a really bad history of maintaining the purchase share, really bad. It creates complexity of multiple brands. When you look at the potential acquirers of companies, the last thing they need is another brand. But they've also figured out if they try to consolidate that brand, they take away the real value of the business they just bought. You've got, you know, various examples. Dow right now is trying very hard, has tried very hard in their acquisitions to really maintain the company and maintain the brand. Others have done that over time, but it kind of has this way of falling apart after a while. And all of a sudden, 5 or 6 years out, all the brands get consolidated. So it's really, when you look at it, it hasn't gone well. And the companies who are going to really buy significant share are going to have to figure out a way to buy large regional or somehow consolidate. We believe that looking at a small brand, or, you know, I'm using the 75 to 100 as kind of the top mark, is there are possibilities that those companies can get together. And I know that's been talked about over time, but looking at a scenario where they could be purchased by a multinational at some multiple, we have real problems with that. It's hard to imagine why that scenario makes sense. It's hard to imagine it going with ProAccess. It's hard to imagine with ASI. It's hard to imagine Dow doing too many more of those. I think Syngenta's got plenty of brands to contend with. So it's a tough one. The other thing we have to look at is there have really been few significant acquisitions in the last 5 years, and the strategic plan leading up to those acquisitions really appears to be largely passed. The reason why they did what they did, they've either decided that it wasn't a very good idea, or they've decided to stick with what they've got and try to grow share. And I realize, especially in this room, that there are a lot of different opinions about whether that makes sense. But again, we sort of, in the work that we do, have to take a position on that, and that's how we feel about it. So when we look at this, and we just try to make a graph out of it, the blue dots are the multinationals, and the gray dots are locals, or either small or small regional companies. And everything on the right-hand side is positive, everything on the left-hand side is negative. So, and some of these we've talked about, some of them I couldn't fit in. I was disciplined to taking out the 28 slides, so that's why you see some of these up here that we didn't talk about in detail. But we see, you know, the trait talk technology availability as being not hugely different. The originator of the technology is probably going to be better and faster. Even though it will probably be licensed to us one way or the other, it's probably not going to be immediately, and it's probably not going to be in everything we want. So the inventor will probably do a little better at it. Again, we talked about the germplasm availability, the quantity, and the quality. Again, we believe that it's good news that we believe that the germplasm will be licensed, but we have to be aware that quantity and quality we're going to be dealing with one way or the other. I think it would be really hard to argue against that, just because it just kind of makes common sense. We believe production cost is a significant difference, and the reason we put it in there is, you know, Pioneer came out and talked about a technology that's going to save 20% on production cost. That's huge. And when you look at the fact that the larger companies have focused for a long time on production technology, they've got much larger plants and much larger throughput. It really stands to reason that there's a pretty significant production advantage to the larger guys. And aside from going into contract production, there's really no reason why that's going to change. The only exception to that we see is if somebody doesn't value their land, that it appears that they have very low production costs. But if you put a reasonable rental value on your land, it's a really tough one. This one's also very hard to measure because the companies don't publicize their production costs. The next one is cost to serve the customer. And what we're saying there is I've probably, through technology audits and other things I've done, I've probably been in front of 40 to 50 companies over the last 5 years, mostly regionals. And if you've got a guy who makes $60,000 a year and he sells 1,200 bags of corn, he's costing you a lot more than a guy who makes $80,000 a year and is selling 10,000 or 8,000. And that sounds like kind of a wild example, but it's not. I've seen situations where people are paying $60, $65 a bag for their field sales force on the road, and we've seen it as low as $4. Big, big difference, and it's hard to measure. We found that the smaller companies tend to hang on to people a little bit longer. They tend to have a little bit more patience with them. They tend to hire people from the larger companies, and the people tend to not be able to bring over quite what they were anticipating. So you put those two things together, and there's really a pretty big difference there. And then transaction value. What is this worth if you go to sell it? And we'll talk about that. I've got this little timer here. It's really annoying. So we're going to look at the trends and drivers, and truly we did snip a bit of this out. We've got more detail if it's something we want to either talk about or provide some detail on. This is one particular area where we're able to do that. So we see the main trends and drivers of the things we're going to be dealing with as global market growth, providing both support and competition for U.S. production inputs. So we've got a rising tide with all ships. Yields, demand, market-driven yield increases support growth in the input markets. Land, increasing values, production of its productivity, changing ownership profile. Even with the projections at the moment that the land prices, the land values are probably not going to stay where they are, there's still a significant, and we've all gotten a rise out of that. Technology, we've got rapid changes, rapid adoption, need for service. And this really goes on, this is way beyond traits. We're talking about all kinds of different technologies, from precision ag all the way down. And that's, as it's talked about, is very significant. Enhanced nutrients, we've seen quite a bit of transaction activity in this area. And it'll be interesting to see how they market it and how the seed companies get more involved in it, because it truly is a large item right now. It's integrated in most companies with the seed treatment business. And then consolidation, affecting really the whole production chain. And we're not really talking about seed company consolidation here. So again, looking at our bubbles, we've got, this is really just for the industry in general, as opposed to kind of trying to divide it out between large and small. We think the global market growth is extremely positive, extremely important. Yields are extremely important. One way or another, everything that's happening in trade development is after yields. Land, the reason why land is a little lower is that it probably isn't going to at least completely remain that way over a reasonable period. At least the estimates would say that. So we have to be mindful of that. And we have to be mindful that so many people paid so much for land that they're going to be suffering from that if the commodity prices go down. Technology, again, we see that as a huge opportunity. If you can get involved in the service side of the business, there's a lot to be gained there. It's a little bit like you were saying with the services. I mean, one of the things is going to be an incredible service provider. It's nothing we can do kind of on the side. We're going to have to respond in 11 minutes or respond in an hour or whatever. Those are the two numbers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The enhanced nutrients we talked about, maybe not quite as much of an opportunity, but it's really kind of hard to tell. The jury's still out on that one. And consolidation in the product chain, creates opportunities in our view. So the ag sector is strong, and a few key characteristics are going to empower a lot of participants to stay strong. Managing volatility, keeping pace with velocity, and creating and providing value. Those sound like kind of glib statements, but if you really read through them and read the subs below that, there really is a lot behind that. And if you focus and follow these things, there's going to be a lot to gain. So in conclusion, the world looks good, in our view, for the corn and soybean business. It's been good, and we think it looks good into the future. Macro trends nearly all complement the seed companies who can extend their services base. When you look at that before, every single blue bubble was at least above the 50% line. The micro trends indicate new trade introductions, multiple trade introductions by multiple players. Trade availability coupled with apparent attempt to continue licensing germplasm should lend some comfort to small and medium-sized players. Services and adaption to trends will be key success factors. Small seed companies will still have certain scale and efficiencies. That doesn't mean that the business model won't work. It's just something we have to accept and deal with and understand the implications. We believe the transaction value and sector interest will be largely unchanged. And that's our presentation. Thank you.